Alone, I say. Everyone wants to be the guy up on stage. Ethan shrugs. When I go to concerts and it's crowded and no one is bothering me and it's like just me and the music, that's when I don't feel alone. I guess I'm not much of a people person, he says.
Really? Tell that to everyone at Wood Valley, I say.
Huh?
Does he not notice that every girl in school lusts after him? That people actually line up to talk to him? Come on, it's like you have a harem at lunchtime. Again, I say too much. Seriously, I need lessons on how to flirt.
Nah, that has nothing to do with me. It's because of... Never mind. Long story.
I want to say something like, I have time, but I see how he is, that things are pretty straightforward. When he wants to talk, he talks. When he doesn't, he doesn't. I don't know him well enough yet to push.
Who writes your lyrics?
What I really want to know is who wrote The Girl No One Knows. But I don't want to admit to knowing Ovil's entire playlist. Dree sent me all of their songs, but I keep listening to that one on repeat. My tally now so high I'd die of embarrassment if anyone ever saw it. At the store, Liam only sang the chorus, which is simple and catchy, and misleading because the rest of the song is something altogether different. Brooding. Beautiful. Desperate.
A poem, really. An elegy. Depends on the song. Me, usually. Some Liam. Oh, and this guy Caleb, who's not actually in the band but hangs around and pitches in.
My head shoots up. Caleb? Did he write The Girl No One Knows? If so, then it all makes sense. SN is the type to write song lyrics, haunting, melancholy ones, but not the type to get up on stage and sing them out loud, in front of people. Caleb's the tall guy, right?
Yeah, you know him?
Not really. Sort of. Met him the other day at work.
Yeah, he and Liam are tight.
I guess Ethan knows I work at Liam's mom's store. I must have told him last week when I mentioned knowing Liam. Or did Liam mention it? Oh, shit. Have they talked about me? My palms start to sweat. I picture Ethan and Liam laughing about how I made it seem like Liam and I are close friends. Is that why Jem called me a skank? Does everyone think I'm obsessed with Liam? Does Liam? Does Ethan? Does Caleb? You think I'll ever figure this school out? I ask Ethan. It's frustrating how everyone knows each other. My closest friend here is SN, or should I just call him Caleb, and our relationship consists solely of text messages. I need to hire Dree to give me a full background on everyone so I can stop stepping in it.
Nope, Ethan says. I haven't, and I've been here since kindergarten. But you know what I did figure out?
What?
You don't have to.
I don't?
Nope, not even a little bit.
Really? I now stir my latte, which is finished, which means I'm stirring an empty cup. I need to keep my hands busy. The desire to touch Ethan's hair, even his hands, has become borderline uncontrollable. I want to bite his earlobe, which looks like it once housed an ill-advised earring. I want to ask him how he can run so hot and so cold, how right now he can be so reassuring, almost a real friend, and at the party, I wasn't worth enough of his time to stop and say more than that one syllable, that dismissive, hey.
Yep, who cares about all these assholes? A few of them are great people. The vast majority are not. And at the end of the day, you just have to be yourself. If they don't like you, screw them.
Jesse is Jesse is Jesse.
Right. Jesse is Jesse is Jesse.
Fine. I'll admit it. I'm sad when Ethan stops saying my name. Home, or more accurately, the place I eat and sleep. Under the dome, chicken marbella or marsala or something with an M, spears of asparagus, a dollop of wild rice. SN.
Your day? Go.
Me. Great, actually. Yours?
SN.
Memorable.
I only saw Caleb once today. He was leaning against a locker in the hall at school, and when he saw me, he saluted me with his cell phone and then whispered something to the guy standing next to him, a senior who has the felt-like complexion of a Muppet. I assume his cell salute meant something like, let's keep talking with our phones, not in person, since there's been no attempt to make my suggestion of a date a reality. But 30 seconds later, my IM dinged.
SN. Three things. One, Hendrix was the most amazing guitarist who ever lived, even better than Jimmy Page. Two, sometimes when I listen to music, I actually feel lighter. Three, and sometimes when I play Xbox, I feel nothing.
Me. Which do you like better, music or Xbox?
SN. Ah, that's a good question. No doubt my mom's medicine cabinet is like her Xbox, right? So, I'm going to say music, because there's nothing scarier to me than becoming my mother.
SN.
But truthfully?
SN.
Xbox.
I think it's becoming clear Caleb and I will never actually chat over hot beverages, never say out loud that SN is Caleb and Caleb is SN. And maybe it's better that way. Maybe we've said too many scary things online already, and knowing what we've already shared, all that honesty makes talking in person impossible. Still, it's sad because I'm starting to appreciate his particular brand of hotness. Sitting across from him wouldn't be distracting the way it is with Ethan. He's a blanker, simpler, well-balanced canvas, like Rachel's white-on-white walls.
Me. Your day was memorable? Memorable equals good? Or memorable equals bad?
SN.
Good. What was under the dome tonight?
Me. Fancy pants chicken? And you? Please tell me not Whole Foods sushi again. I'm starting to worry about you getting mercury poisoning.
SN. My mom cooked, actually, which, as you know, is weird. It was good, though. Homemade mac and cheese. My favorite when I was a kid. I guess still my favorite.
Me. That's sweet of her.
SN. Yeah, it felt like an apology. Like she knows she's been... absent.
Me. Did she seem, you know, clear?
SN. Hard to tell, but yeah. I'm allowing myself to think so. At least for tonight.
Me.
Good.
SN.
Then again, do you know what's the number one sign of mercury poisoning?
Me.
What?
SN.
Optimism.
That night, I dream about Ethan and Caleb, both of them in my room and perched on my daybed, except they've switched t-shirts. Ethan wears gray, and Caleb wears Batman, and neither of them talks to me. Caleb plays with his phone, texting someone else, maybe me, but not the me in this room. And Ethan strums his guitar, lost in some complicated fingerwork. Lost in the way that happens when he looks out the library window. I sit behind them, quiet, just watching and admiring the backs of their very different necks, trying not to be bothered by the fact that they don't even realize I'm right here. Chapter 21. What do you guys think about me getting a pink stripe? Like, just slightly off-center. Dree asks, and runs her fingers through her unruly brown hair. We are sitting outside during our free period, our faces tilted up toward the sun like hungry cartoon flowers. I now have sunglasses. Dree and Agnes help me pick out a knockoff pair, and I love them. They feel transformative, like I'm somehow a different person with large squares of plastic covering my face.
Pink?
Agnes asks. Pink with an exclamation point instead of an eye pink, I ask.
Maybe, Dree says.
Either.
Both.
No, Agnes says it straight out. No attempt to preserve the possibility. Pure veto, which is exactly what Scarlett did when I suggested getting my inner ear flab pierced. Well, after she told me to Google what that part of the body is actually called, because she never wanted to hear the words, my inner ear flap, together in a sentence again. Can't say I blamed her.
Turns out it's called your tragus, which sounds vaguely dirty. No one should have their tragus pierced.
How about all pink? Dree asks. Dye my whole head.
I don't know, I say. I like your hair the way it is.
Why? Why would you do that to yourself?
Agnes asks, though neither Dree nor I have the nerve to point out that Agnes's red hair is as artificial as Dree's would be if she were to dye hers pink. Then again, Agnes's red somehow works in a way that I don't think Dree's pink would. Not a fine line between red and pink when we are talking hair.
I just want to change, she says.
This is like the ukulele. You just want to be noticed, Agnes says, blunt but not unkind.
I get it. I feel, I don't know, sort of invisible these days. Like, you know, except for you guys, no one would notice if I didn't even go to this school, Dree says, and leans back so that she's lying down, staring up at the vast blue sky, so open there aren't even clouds to read. I consider telling her that SN told me to befriend her, that he obviously has noticed how cool and funny she is, but for some reason I'm embarrassed. I want her to think our friendship was totally organic.
Honestly, I'd kill to be invisible, I say. Jem and Crystal won't leave me alone.
Screw them, Agnes says. They just wish they could be as cool as you.
I am not cool. I am the opposite of cool, I say.
You are cool. I mean, now that I know you, I realize you're actually something better than cool. But you somehow give off this badass above-it-all vibe. And you're hot, Agnes says. In Jem's world, no one else is allowed to be hot.
Seriously? Who are you even talking about right now? I ask.
They're just jealous because Liam likes you. Honestly, I'm jealous because Liam likes you, Dree says.
Liam doesn't like me, I say. I just work at his mom's store.
Whatever, Dree says.
No, seriously, we're just co-workers, and for the record, I don't like him. Not in that way, at least.
I hope Dree believes me. I need her to believe me.
Then you're crazy, she says, because he's smoking.
Please do not get a pink stripe because of Liam Sandler, Agnes says. He's not worth it.
I spot Ethan crossing the lawn, coffee in hand, heading to the parking lot, even though it's only noon. And just like every other time I've seen him like this, what I think of as out in the wild, I feel like I have managed to conjure him up, as if he has appeared only because I'm thinking about him. Which I was, since I pretty much think about him all the time. I can be talking pink hair or Liam Sandler, but what I'm really thinking is, Ethan is Ethan is Ethan. I wonder where he's going, and whether he'll be back in time for English. I hope so. We don't talk to each other much in school, but I like knowing he's behind me, that I could turn around and smile if I had the nerve. Not that I've ever actually had the nerve. Crap. He catches me watching him. I hope I'm far enough away that he can't see the goofy grin. He throws me a fast peace sign before beeping his way into his car. Now Ethan Marks, on the other hand, I say, finally confessing my crush to my friends. I've told Scarlett, of course, but she hasn't gone to school with him since kindergarten. So it didn't really count.
Should I have peace signed Ethan back?
No, I can't pull off a peace sign. It's a lot like cool beans.
Really? You like Ethan? We used to be friends back in junior high.
Dree squeals and sits up to grab my hands, all girly enthusiasm. Or maybe she's just relieved that I don't want Liam. She cocks her head, reconsidering. Though, let's be honest, he's not the most original choice. And
he's kind of damaged, Agnes says.
And he's never dated anyone at school. Never. Ever, Dree says, and my heart sinks a little. Not that I thought I had a chance, but still. Now it feels like a technical impossibility.
But he's totally a panty dropper, Agnes says. No doubt about that.
SN, three things. One, when I read your messages, I hear them in your voice. Two, if I were an animal, I'd be a lemur. Okay, that's probably not true, but I felt like using the word lemur today. And before you say it, yes, I know I'm weird. Three, seriously, I'd like to be a chameleon. Change my colors to match my environment.
Me. One, I've watched Footloose, the remake, not the original, an embarrassing number of times. But it's so moving. A law against dancing? And they fight and win. Swoon.
Two, I could be a better driver. The whole turn left when the light turns red thing here freaks me out.
Three, just so you know, I take back coffee.
SN.
Okay, no sugar for you.
Me.
What?
SN.
A joke. A Seinfeld reference.
Me.
It's not funny.
SN.
It's just coffee. Relax.
Me.
Fine.
SN.
Sorry, forgot how mad you get when I tell you to relax.
Me.
I don't get mad.
SN.
You're mad right now. I can hear it in your virtual voice.
Me. When you tell someone to relax, it suggests that you think they're overly uptight. I'm not being overly uptight.
SN. Wow, that's putting a lot of pressure on my relax. I just meant chill, or no biggie. You forget I'm from Cali. We say shit like that here.
Me. Namaste.
SN. Ah, now you're getting the hang of it. Now stop writing me and get to class. You're going to be late.
Slut!
Jem fake sneezes as I make my way into English. SN is right, I'm late, and now everyone is here, laptops already open, watching me get serenaded with profanity and germs as I walk to my seat.
Her!
She sneezes again, though not sure why she needs the elaborate cover-up. We can all hear her, even, I'm sure, Mrs. Pollock.
Fat ugly bitch!
Just pretend you're wearing Theo's noise-canceling headphones. That you don't see Crystal, or Dree, or even Theo watching. No, do not look up. Do not see that Ethan is here too, back from wherever he went, his eyes following you, blazing with what looks like pity. Nothing worse than pity. Almost there. Just need to pass Jem. I can do this. But I can't. Because next thing I know, my nose hits the desk with a loud crack, and I'm splayed on the floor, a belly flop on the linoleum, my head now an inch from Ethan's Converse.
Are you okay?
He asks. I don't answer, because I don't know. I'm on the ground. My face aches so much worse than when Liam hit me with his guitar case, and the whole class is looking at me. Jem and Crystal are openly laughing, cackling like Disney witches, and I'm too afraid to stand up. I can't tell if my nose is bleeding, if right now I am lying in a pool of my own blood at Ethan's feet. I do know that my ass is spread across the floor like a smear of butter at an angle no one should ever be exposed to, especially someone like Ethan. Thank God it hurts. It helps keep me from feeling the humiliation. Jem stuck out her foot. Of course she did. I'm so stupid. I deserve to be here smelling the floor. Ethan squats down, holds out his hand to help me up. I take a deep breath. The quicker I get up, the quicker this will all be over. I ignore Ethan's hand. I can think of nothing worse than wiping my blood on him, nothing worse than this being the very first time we touch, and so I steady myself with the reliable floor, slowly make my way to sitting, then to standing, and like the fat ugly bitch I am, I shift my bulk into my seat. Nothing graceful about it.
Am I bleeding?
I whisper to Dree. She shakes her head, the shocked look on her face telling me that what just happened is as bad, as embarrassing as I imagine. No, even worse.
Do you need to go to the nurse?
Mrs. Pollock asks, almost in a whisper, as if she doesn't want to attract any extra attention to me.
No.
I say, even though I'd give anything for an ice pack and an Advil. I just can't imagine standing up again, walking past Jem and then down the hall,
hearing the laughter at my back as soon as the door to the classroom closes. No, thank you. All right then, back to crime and punishment, Mrs. Pollock says and redirects the class. I feel Ethan behind me, though, and I can't turn, can't even utter a pathetic thank you, because I'm scared of what my face looks like, and I'm scared I'm going to cry. So I keep my head down, as if by avoiding eye contact I can render myself invisible. Nothing to see here. I think of SN wanting to be a chameleon, blending into the background. I somehow make it to the end of class, my eyes focused only on the desk in front of me. Someone has carved into the wood, Axel loves Fig Newtons. Really? Someone took the time to deface the desk to profess their love for a cookie? Unless, of course, there was a student here actually named Fig Newtons, which, considering the fact that we have 3 Hannibals, 4 Romeos, and 2 Apples, is totally possible. As soon as the bell rings, I grab my bag and run for the door. I don't even wait for Dree. Jesse, a word, please? Mrs. Pollock says just before I make my exit. Now? I ask. I want to leave this room. Get as far away from these people as I can. Find some place where I can be alone and cry, preferably with an ice pack on my nose. I try to focus on Axel and his love of Fig. I've written their whole tragic love story in my head, but instead, Jem's words play on repeat. Whore, slut, fat, ugly bitch. Like song lyrics earworming my brain. They'd sound good set to auto-tune. Whore, slut, fat, ugly bitch. Perhaps I should offer them to Ovil. Yes, if you don't mind. I do mind. I mind very much, but I can't find the way to say so out loud. Mrs. Pollock motions toward a chair in the front of the room, and I sit and wait for the rest of the class to file out. Theo, Crystal, Jem, Dree. I notice Ethan hovering for a second, deciding whether to say something to me. To Mrs. Pollock. But then he taps my chair with his book and leaves, too. And now it's just me and her concerned face, and all I want in the world is to get through the next 5 minutes without crying. Please, God, I beg, though my relationship with God is something I have not yet sorted out. Please let me get out of here without embarrassing myself any more than I already have. I can't stare at Axel's declaration of love here, so instead, I stare at a poster of Shakespeare, a man in a ruffled collar, with a quote underneath, "To be or not to be, that is the question." No, that's not really the question at all. Being seems to be the only thing not entirely up to us. I didn't do anything, I say, which I realize is not the point. She's not mad at me. I'm the obvious victim here, but I'm choosing anger over the tears. Anger is slightly less humiliating. Anger is more consistent with the vibe Agnes claims I give off. Badass and above it all. Mrs. Pollock pulls her desk chair out and straddles it backward. She too wants to seem cool and casual, like she's a student, not a teacher. I just wanted to see how things were going. If there was anything you wanted to talk about, she says. Nope. I wipe my nose with the back of my hand. The tears are filling my eyes, but have not yet betrayed me by falling. They wait, on the verge. If I ever write a memoir, that's what I'll call it, on the verge. I tripped, it happens. Switching schools can be tough. I'm fine. And I hate to say it, but girls in particular can be really cruel at your age. I'm fine. I'm not sure what to do here. I mean, I can talk to Principal Hockman. We have a zero-tolerance policy toward bullying. I'm fine. But I have a feeling that just might make things worse for you. Jem's dad is a big donor here, and... Seriously, I'm fine. She looks at me expectantly. What does she want from me? Whore, slut, fat ugly bitch. Did you do something to cause her to say those things? I'm just trying to understand, she says, and leans on the pillow she has made with her arms, as if to say, we're just hanging, no problem. Are you asking me if I did something to deserve Jem tripping me and calling me a whore, a slut, and a fat, ugly bitch? Seriously? You are asking me that? I forget that this woman is responsible for 1/6 of my GPA, that she can keep me from getting a college scholarship. I should play nice, but it turns out anger is not only preferable, but easier. Comes naturally. I didn't mean... I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand. She looks hurt now, like she's the one who's about to cry. Like she's the one who just busted her face in front of the entire class. The answer is no. I have not touched a single guy in this school, or actually pretty much ever, not that that would justify a fellow student calling me a whore or a slut. And as for the fat ugly bitch, I presume that's subjective. If I weren't so upset, I'd take a moment to revel in the fact that I found the right words for once, that I said exactly what I wanted to say. But I don't feel like reveling. I feel like running away. Do you need my BMI? I'm sure that can be arranged. No, you got it all wrong. I didn't mean... Are we done here? I ask. Screw it. It wasn't like my grades were going to be so stellar at Wood Valley anyway. I'm pretty sure that college scholarship thing was just a pipe dream. And at least one mystery has been solved. Jem can do or say whatever she wants, because her dad pays off the administration. I guess that's what a little tax fraud buys you. I'm just trying to help, she says. I don't want to make things worse, but I don't hear the rest of Mrs. Pollock's sentence, because I've already run out the door. Chapter 22. Head down, 30 feet until I reach my car. Jesse, you can do this. 20 feet. My hands are shaking, but I keep them in my pockets so no one can see. I keep walking. No one is looking, I tell myself. No one can see you. 15 feet. Almost there. I will get into my car. I will put the key in the ignition. I will drive and not stop until the gas light comes on. I will head east, find whatever major highway takes me to Chicago. I will show up at Scarlett's in time for her mom to serve me homemade kimchi. Hey, you okay? I see his shoes before I see his face, the guitar strap across his chest, but that's because I don't want to look all the way up. Liam is the last person I want to see right now, except maybe his horrible girlfriend, but at least if I saw Jem, I would find a way to draw blood. Scratch her with my nails, break her surgically crafted six-figure nose, crack her porcelain veneers. Please, just leave me alone. Tears are kind of like urine. There is only so long you can hold them in. My car is 10 feet away. 10 short feet, and then I can drive and cry without anyone ever knowing. I look forward to crossing state lines. I picture the sign, "You are exiting California." Whoa, hold it. What's going on? Liam asks and grabs my shoulder to stop me from storming off. I shrug, but his grip is strong. You need me to call someone or something? No. You know what I need? For you and your girlfriend to leave me the hell alone. I am furious. Maybe not at Liam, though that doesn't seem to be relevant right now. Jem and Crystal's attacks used to be mostly subtle and stupid. My clothes or my laptop tattoos, whatever. Now, after I talked to Liam for 2 minutes at a party, the bullying has become something altogether different. Sorry, but his chit-chat really isn't all that exciting. Definitely not worth this. For a second, I play that game that sometimes soothes me. What would I be doing right now if I were in Chicago and we had never moved? I'd be in a newspaper meeting, or maybe yearbook, cropping pictures and picking fonts. I wouldn't be happy, no. But I wouldn't feel like this. What are you talking about? Liam looks confused. I wonder if he is not so bright. According to Dree, he and Jem have been dating for 6 months, which is 5 months and 29 days longer than he should have needed to realize that his girlfriend is a royal bitch. Liam swings Earl off, rests him on the ground next to a car. A Tesla. Seriously, some kid at Wood Valley drives a freaking Tesla? Who the hell are these people? Forget it. Please, just leave me alone. You, talking to me? The opposite of helping, I say.
I don't understand.
You want to know why I'm upset? Just go ask Jem, I say, and finally close those last few steps to my car.
Wait, he says, will you be, you know, working this afternoon?
Of course, I'm not driving or flying to Chicago today. There will be no signs, literal or otherwise. Escaping is mere fantasy. I have to save up first, since I barely have enough cash to fill my gas tank. My body deflates. There will be no running, no hiding. This, right here, this is my life. This. Yeah, I'll be there. I get into my car, reverse out of my spot so fast I wonder if I've left skid marks. I wait until school is far in my rearview mirror before I start weeping.
SN. Watched Footloose yesterday, both versions, in your honor.
Me. And?
SN. They don't make sense. You can't have a local ordinance against dancing. That's a restriction of our constitutional freedom of expression. Not to mention the whole church-state thing.
Me. Groan.
SN. And even if you suspend disbelief on that major plot point, well...
Me.
What?
SN.
They just aren't very good movies.
Me. Tell me how you really feel.
SN. But still, somehow I like the idea of you liking them. Does that make sense?
Me. Not at all, but I'll take it. I'm having a shitty day, considering hightailing it back to Chicago.
SN. No!
Me.
Ha! Love when your shift key comes out.
And your day?
SN. My mom hasn't left the couch once. Brought her lunch. She didn't eat it. So far gone, she didn't even look up at me.
Me.
I'm so sorry. I wish I could help. What about your dad?
SN.
He's talking about sending her to rehab. But honestly, drugs aren't really the problem. I mean, they are. But they're more a symptom of the problem.
Me.
What do you mean?
SN.
She lost a kid. You don't just bounce back from that.
Me. But she still has you.
SN. Why was your day so bad?
Me. Nothing important. Just one of those days.
SN. Don't leave LA. Please. You just can't.
Promise?
I pause. What does a promise to Caleb mean? We've glided past his rejection of my coffee offer, have just dug in deeper, as if it never happened. Still, I'd be lying if I didn't admit that his complete unwillingness to hang out with me in real life doesn't hurt. Again today, he didn't say hello to me in the hallway, just another phone salute. I tell myself it's because he's scared of ruining our never-ending conversation, but I tell myself a lot of things I don't actually believe. So I lie.
Me.
Promise. When I get to work, Liam's mom is behind the counter. Pure relief that I don't have to face Liam. Instead of saying hello, she hands me a box of books, asks me to shelve them.
Sure thing, I say, looking through the pile.
A lot of financial guides. Overnight Millionaire, Beat the Market. Money Now. I head over to the shelf that Liam's mom has labeled, Get Rich Quick! ! And begin to sort the books alphabetically by author. For a second, I think about picking one up for my dad, but then I remember that, one, we are no longer on speaking terms, and two, my dad could actually write one of these books, though it would be a bit short. Marry up.
I like your can-do spirit. Liam's mom says, since I shelve fast, anything to keep busy.
She smiles Liam's smile at me. I've worked here for weeks now, and I can't remember her name.
I just think of her as Liam's mom, or sometimes, I guess, Mrs. Sandler. I bet if I ran into her somewhere else, un-bookstore-related, I wouldn't recognize her. She looks a lot like the moms back home. No-nonsense hair. Everything maximized for efficiency, not necessarily attractiveness. Like a real mom, not an aging actress. I try to think about Caleb's smile, but I'm not sure I've actually seen it. Which makes sense. SN is not exactly the smiley type. I can easily picture Ethan's smile, though, how it unfolds across his face, from left to right, like a perfect sentence. Clearly, I need to stop this Ethan obsession. Not healthy.
You okay? You look a little smeared, Mrs. Sandler says, handing me a tissue. You want to talk about it?
Damn it. Forgot that I experimented with mascara this morning. Despite my protests that makeup and I are not friends, Agnes had promised that waving a wand against my eyelashes would change my life. Now it's just unclear what's smudged mascara and what's bruising.
Not really.
I wonder if Mrs. Sandler likes her son's girlfriend, if she has ever met Jem. Does Liam have to keep his bedroom door open when she's over? Somehow, I doubt it. Those are quaint Midwestern rules. They don't apply in L.A., where the kids openly smoke pot and drive fresh from the dealership cars and have parents who will donate money to get them out of trouble. Liam's mom probably buys him condoms, jokes over takeout sushi about not wanting him to make any little Liams. I think of Caleb's mom, prone on the couch, so out of it she can't be bothered to eat lunch. What did he bring her? I wonder what his mom looks like, if she too is tall and handsome, if she too prefers to wear gray.
Better? I ask after I wipe my face, and I turn to face Mrs. Sandler. The Kleenex is black, probably a little salty now, too.
Much. You're a really beautiful girl. Inside and out. Do you know that?
Thanks, I say or ask. How strange, I think, to be called both ugly and beautiful, two words I rarely hear in the same day. The former because most people are neither that mean nor that truthful, the latter because it has never applied to me. Agnes called me hot today, too. Another word never before used to describe me, though I think of hot as altogether different from beautiful. Hot seems to be about guys liking you. Beautiful is about liking how you look. Of course, Liam's mom is old enough to think all 16-year-old girls are beautiful. Jem, on the other hand, sees me through clearer eyes.
You can take the afternoon off if you need to, Liam's mom says. And her kindness almost makes me ache. Reminds me that when I go home, it will be to Rachel's house. My mom will not be there to nurse me back from this. There is no longer a person in the world who is interested in everything I have to say, just by virtue of the fact that it comes out of my mouth. Scar tries, but it's not the same. My mom will not make me a cup of cocoa with mini marshmallows, and we won't share a plate of Chips Ahoy, more than a dozen between us, an indulgence reserved for bad days. My mom wasn't strict about what counted when it came to me. A B on a math test I thought I had aced, or losing my favorite charm bracelet. When she needed the boost, though, a ritual was reserved for only the very worst occasions. A cancer diagnosis, or later, a T-cell count being low. The word spread being used by a medical professional after looking at a black and white photo of her insides. Eventually, I made the cocoa and drank both of ours. Ate all the cookies. Thanks, but I honestly could use the cash. I picture Scarlett's parents' basement. Not home. Not even close. But closer than what I have now.
a big L-shaped couch and an oversized TV from last century, as thick as it is tall. The slightest hint of mold in the air, almost but never quite covered up by the smell of fresh laundry. It wouldn't be so bad. School would be familiar and easy after Wood Valley. I'd have Scarlet back, maybe even my old job at the Smoothie King. My dad would barely notice I'm gone. He might even be relieved not to have to worry about me. I could do it. I really could. Me. Your parents' basement couch available? Maybe next term? Scarlet. For reals? Me. For reals. Scarlet. Abso-freaking-lutely. Though you might need to wipe it down first. Me. Why? Scarlet. Let's just say it's where Adam and I like to, play. So is all okay? Are you going somewhere? Liam's mom asks, breaking my intense bout of texting. Clearly, I should put my phone away and finish shelving. Today is not the day to get fired. Sorry? I ask. She points behind me, and it's only then, when I follow her finger, that I notice I've subconsciously migrated over to the travel section.
Chapter 23. Dad, can we talk tonight, honey? I pause. Since our pancake fight 8 days ago, I have successfully avoided my dad, not so much as passed him in the halls of Rachel's house. This is his first overture toward peace. But screw that. Why should I always operate on his timetable? Be available when it's suddenly convenient for him. Be the good daughter who makes things easy and simple. Be the one who plays along, tries to make him feel better about his bad choices. What about when I need him? Where is he then? I quit. He married Rachel. Let that be her job now. I have nothing to say to him. Me. Sorry, working late. Dad.
I miss you.
No, I have nothing to say at all. Chapter 24. And so here it is, Wood Valley Giving Day. I take SN at his word and wear my Vans, mostly because I don't have anything resembling work shoes, and it's too hot for my winter boots, which are comfy and ugly as hell, and which would most certainly make Jem weep with joy at how easily I make myself a target. I wear my mom's old University of Illinois t-shirt, the one that's been laundered so many times the writing is fading, and an old pair of ripped jeans, and pull my hair back into a ponytail. Not at all chic, but I figure a day devoted to physical labor slash community service does not require chic, even at Wood Valley. I pat some concealer on the bridge of my nose, cover up the bruising. Lesson learned, no mascara. School is closed today. Instead of going to our normal classes, we're expected to report for work at the Habitat for Humanity site. For once, Theo wanted to drive in together, since he was worried about getting lost and carjacked, though the neighborhood looks not too different from where I grew up. But apparently, this place is in desperate need of 200 rich kids who have never before touched a power tool. We are supposed to erect the frame of a house. Someone has not thought this through. Jem is here, because she is everywhere, she and Crystal, and there is nothing I can do about their omnipresence. She wears a tank top with huge armholes thrown over a sequined sports bra, which is one of those things that probably shouldn't exist, but for which the 1% are willing to pay large sums of money nonetheless. Her shirt bears the words, I kid you not, Thug Life. And although this place is pretty big, a whole house will be built on this plot of land. Jem is for some reason drawn to that which she hates, and she finds me. Walks right by, so close that I shouldn't be surprised when I feel her shoulder jam into mine. And yet I am. The pain is sharp and perverse, and I imagine it hurt her just as much as it hurt me. Maybe more since she's bony.
Excuse me, she says, all righteous indignation. Theo and I have just arrived, so I haven't even had a chance to find my friends, to at least surround myself by my wholly ineffective girl team. Not that Dree and Agnes could do anything, necessarily, but still. What does Jem want from me? A scene? A punch? Tears? Or am I giving her exactly what she's asking for when I stand here and look at her, slack-jawed? No words come, not even the easy ones she likes to slug at me.
Really?
Theo says, and at first I think he's talking to me, and I feel so alone that I may actually cry, right here, right now. Finally give the people what they want.
Touch Jesse again, and I swear to God, I will ruin you.
Theo is talking to Jem, actually pointing his finger in her face. He looks menacing in his own version of a community service day outfit. Lumberjack flannel shirt, designer jeans, spotless, intentionally untied Timberlands. She just stares at him, and I can see her gums sitting stupidly in her mouth.
Blink once so I know you understand what I'm saying, he says.
Whatever, Jem says, just as Liam comes over to join us, all cheerful and oblivious, blocking her exit.
Hey, guys. Happy Wood Valley Giving Day.
Liam smiles at us, at me, as if yesterday never happened. And like this is all fun, spending the morning outside among friends. He already has a hammer in his hand, ready to build. I can almost hear his mom praising his can-do attitude. On stage, he seems like a rock star. Right now, he's more like a Boy Scout with a sprinkling of whiteheads on his chin. I'm not a particular fan of either look, but where's Dree? She'd lap this up.
Liam, keep your girl on her leash, okay?
Theo says, and walks away. His job done, I guess. And though I appreciate his support, I'm mortified. And left standing here, like an idiot.
What's he talking about?
Liam asks Jem. But then I notice he's actually looking at me. Nothing, I answer, and then spot Caleb on the other side of the lawn, staring into his phone. Screw it. My first instinct was to text SN. He always cheers me up, but I might as well just go talk to him. I'm too beaten down for this anonymity nonsense. It also occurs to me that Caleb may be the only person here who actually knows what he's doing. He built a school after all. Later, Liam. I cross the lawn, vaguely hear Jem and Liam begin to argue. Hey there, I say once I'm in front of Caleb. Instead of his usual uniform, he's sporting a USC sweatshirt and jeans with paint splatters, a baseball cap pulled low, as if he wants to downplay his good looks. Still a Ken doll, just the construction version. Always on your phone, I smile, the closest I get to flirting, which is its own form of double-talking, I guess. I hope he can't see my bruises.
Yeah, he says. Thank God Liam found it at the party. Not sure how I would have lived without it.
Phew, I say, and exaggeratedly wipe my hand against my brow. I look like a moron.
About that coffee, he says.
Like I said, we don't have to. I want to say, I like talking to you every day. I look forward to your three things. I think about you. A lot. Let's make this real. But of course I don't. For whatever reason, he wants to keep up the virtual divide.
No, I'd really like to. It'll be fun to show a newbie the ropes. Maybe after school on Thursday?
Sure, I say.
Cool.
He says and salutes me with his phone again, that weird let's I am later signal. I feel bad about his brush off. He obviously doesn't want me to stay and chat. But a minute later, my phone buzzes,
SN. Saving the world one nail at a time.
Me. I will sleep well tonight knowing I did my good deed for the year.
SN. Your sarcasm is endearing.
Me. Is it really?
SN. Yes. Yes, it is.
Dree hugs me as if we didn't just see each other less than 24 hours ago, and as if she didn't text me 10 times last night to make sure I was okay. Clearly, she feels bad about not helping me yesterday, but what could she have done? I'm the one who let myself be tripped.
I love WVGD. I'd take the server classes any day, she says, and squints up at Liam on a ladder, his shirt now off, advertising an impressive, almost but not quite six-pack, and a splattering of freckles. Not a bad view.
I know, she's one note,
Agnes says with an apologetic look.
Sorry to hear about all the gem drama yesterday. You want me to kick her ass?
Would be fun to watch, but no thanks. I think about how many people have offered an ass-kicking on my behalf since I moved here, and I feel grateful. Although I wish I didn't need defending, it's nice knowing there are people who have my back. Theo was actually my knight in shining armor today.
Seriously? Theo?
Dree asks.
Yep, I'm about as shocked as you are.
Look at that. Family comes first, Agnes says.
Maybe it does, I say, looking over at Theo, who has found Ashby. Her hair is no longer pink, but a shocking white, and they're laughing on the fringes of the job site, totally unconcerned about participating in today's events. In fact, I'm pretty sure he's rolling a big fat joint. Lunch is a full buffet, set up in aluminum trays over fire burners. None of that bag lunch nonsense. It almost looks like Gloria was here. Perhaps Rachel's donation to WVGD. But no, it turns out it's Jem's dad who is responsible. There's even a card on the table saying, "Thank you to the Carter family for this organic feast." Shit. I wonder if that means I can't eat.
Whatever. Don't let her stop you, Ethan says, and I jump as much from the fact that I didn't realize he was behind me as from the fact that he has read my mind.
I know it's stupid, but...
Nah, not stupid. But if it's as good as last year, I promise you won't want to miss it, even out of pride.
It's not pride. It's not wanting to give her another reason to come near me.
Seriously? I thought you were tougher than that, Ethan says, and he takes 2 plates and piles them with food, hands one to me.
What made you think that? I ask. He shrugs, motions for me to follow him, and so of course I do. I've noticed that Ethan has the ability to find a space and make it his own, and he's even managed to do that here, though we are only spending a single day on this construction site. He sits on the ground behind the half wall of the future kitchen and under the shade of an enormous grapefruit tree. Away from the rest of our class, and though not quite out of view, in a direction no one would think to look.
So, listen. Sorry about yesterday,
Ethan says.
Why?
You didn't do anything, I say, and follow his lead and start eating. He's right. The food is delicious. Cheeseburgers, though the cheese is neither yellow nor processed, and probably has a French name I can't pronounce, and the burger resembles a burger only in form. Kobe beef, according to the tiny flag stuck in its center, as if this designation is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Thug life, my ass. It's Jem's world, I think, not for the first time. The rest of us just get to live in it.
Exactly. I sit there and listen to those girls say stupid crap and I just pretend I can't hear them, because it's all so dumb. It doesn't seem worth it. But I don't know. I should have said something. And I wish I had seen her foot.
It's not your job to protect me, I say,
and reflexively reach up and press the bruise.
Still, I should have. Does it hurt?
He asks, and his hand goes out as if to touch my face, and then he thinks better of it, brings it back to his side. Yeah, a little, I admit.
You deserve... I don't know.
Ethan shrugs, and for a moment, I think he may be blushing. I hear Agnes and Dree in my head. He's damaged. He's never, ever dated anyone at Wood Valley.
Not that.
You know what I deserve? An A in English, I say, and Jem can suck it, because Ethan and I toast with our gourmet cheeseburgers. Thank you, I tell Theo later on the ride home, as we glide past little houses and mini malls with signs written in Korean, and car washes, and a vast array of fast food franchises. A million non-Kobe hamburgers to choose from.
It was nothing.
Well, I appreciate it. You didn't have to. I pretend to be deep in concentration as I make a tricky left turn, but really, I feel shy. This thank you feels somewhat like an I'm sorry, though I'm not sure why. Recently, my existence feels like everyone else's burden.
Jem once called me a faggot,
he says, so low that at first I'm not sure I heard correctly. Seriously?
Yep. I mean, it was a million years ago, and it was actually the first time I had ever even heard the word. So I went home and asked my dad. I actually said to him, like, Daddy, what's a faggot?
Theo looks out the window, his hand up against the glass, like a child trapped on a long road trip, desperate for human connection from the other passengers on the road. There's nothing lonelier than a hand on glass. Maybe because it's so rarely reciprocated. What did your dad say? I'm curious about Theo's father, whether Rachel has some sort of type. I picture him as bigger than my dad and more handsome, dressed in shirts with little polo players and pressed by Gloria khakis. There aren't pictures of him around, which would be weird, but then I realize there aren't very many pictures at all. Like Theo has arrived into almost adulthood in this current form and shape, nothing to prove he was once a dimply baby. The walls of my old house were covered with pictures of my family. Each of my school photos were framed and mounted in chronological order, even the ones where I was caught with my eyes closed, or with a messy ponytail, or in that horrible awkward phase when I had both braces and baby fat. My own personal timeline leading upstairs. Who knows? Maybe Rachel thinks family photos, like color, clash with her decor.
My dad was great about it, actually. Said it's not a nice word, that there are better words for boys who like boys. And he said that it would be okay if one day I decided I liked boys too, and it would be okay if I didn't. That he loved me no matter what.
Theo's voice cracks. I don't look over, keep my eyes on the road, wait for him.
I was really lucky. I mean, I never even had to really come out to my parents. They always knew, and it was always okay. Or not even okay, better than that. Not something that had to be evaluated at all. It just was. Like having brown hair.
Your dad sounds like he was really cool. Theo nods.
Have you ever wished it was the other way around?
He asks me. What do you mean?
I mean that it was your dad instead of your mom.
Honestly, all the time.
It would, like, literally break my mom's heart if she heard me say that. But he got me, you know? He understood. Just everything.
My dad knows I would switch if I could, I think. Maybe that's why he never wants to hang out with me anymore, because he sees it on my face. Even as I'm talking, I realize this is not quite true.
I just think he finds Rachel more interesting. My mom got sick right around the time when I was supposed to stop wanting to hang out with my parents, when the pull was supposed to turn to pushing. And yet that never happened.